I'm going to do my best in this short amount of time to cover this this whole issue. Before the Surgeon General's report, I was a part of a consultation that led to this document, and if you're not familiar with this, this was published by the Pan American Health Organization. And really, this was one of the first documents that really laid out a very broad perspective of what sexual health is and how to promote it throughout the region of the Americas. It was all going simultaneously with the Surgeon General's call to action, really, but this was published in 2000. And it really recognized that sexual health was a very broad and a very unifying concept to address the myriad of sexual health issues that were facing governments, and this was a public policy sort of guiding a document. The same thing with the Surgeon General's document, but what was really unique, and there were several, like in the UK and Australia, they were working on national frameworks for sexual health. But if you looked at them, they were very, very STD, HIV focused. And what was unique about the Surgeon General's document is that really looked at sexual health in the broadest conceivable framework, and recognize that we cannot live in these silos of dealing with reproductive health, sexual health, STD, HIV, domestic violence, all these things, that they are all very, very intertwined. And we need a broad strategy to promote sexual health in this country and around the world. And also across the lifespan, from the very beginning to older age. And so this document has really continued to be a real very broad thinking document that we're working on trying to resurrect with a national strategy to promote sexual health in this country. And one of the things, one of the most important things that Dr. Satcher said we had to do is we had to have a thoughtful and mature discussion about sexual, and we are, because our culture remains so sexually dysfunctional that we cannot simply talk about things in a mature and open and frank and honest way, respecting differences and arriving at common ground. In 2002, and one of the things even with the PAHO document is that if you're going to promote sexual health, what is it? And at the time, and I remember when we first were conceiving this with Dr. Satcher and looking at promoting sexual health, he said, well, what is it? And I said, well, there's really only one definition of sexual health, and that was done by WHO in 1975. And it was a little out of date, a little rusty, very 70-ish. Actually, if you go back to it, it's really kind of nice. But, you know, definitions are in a whole kind of cultural context. I pushed the World Health Organization to really kind of revisit that definition, because WHO was interested in trying to promote sexual health on a global scale. But you needed a definition of what it is. So this is the WHO definition. They had a consultation. They brought people from all over the world. They thought, my God, these people are going to kill one another, you know, and we're never going to reach consensus. And there was this consensus definition, which I think is good. One of the main principles throughout all the definitions is that it is more than the absence of disease and dysfunction. It's much more than that. A positive approach, respectful approach to sexual relationships, having pleasurable and safe sexual experiences free of coercion, discrimination, and violence. And for sexual health, this was a very interesting thing, because they told me right off the bat that, you know, as we start to consider this definition, sexual rights are off the table. We cannot go there. And the consultation, you know, in unified fashion said, how can you have sexual health without rights? And so this sexual rights was embedded into the WHO definition, which was actually in some of the paragraphs in the 1975 definition, so it actually got elevated in this definition. And then they articulated what are sexual rights, and you can find this on the WHO webpage. Just conceptually, sexual health, as John mentioned, I think the public health officials are really recognizing that sexual health is important to people's well-being as physical and mental health, and it's really gaining momentum in terms of being a term that is accepted as important as these other kind of factors. But when we look at the different aspects of sexual health. And I know this is controversial because many people are familiar with, reproductive health. But where does all of these other issues like sexual violence, STI prevention and treatment fit in? And they're obviously overlapping, and these Venn diagrams are not perfect, but just be thinking about that. And what is really being proposed in these broader kind of conceptualizations of sexual health is that this is really a unifying concept that incorporates all of those issues, and you have to deal with STI, pregnancy prevention, violence, all of these sexual dysfunctions, everything in one. And this was certainly articulated in the WASC Declaration of Sexual Health for the Millennium, which was published in 2008. That can be found on the WAS website. And what we tried to do is look at the Millennium Development Goals and align sexual health goals with sexual health goals. And so there were eight declarations of that were needed to promote sexual health around the world that aligned with the Millennium Development Goals. The assumption was that if you promoted sexual health in this broad sense, you would have peace, prosperity, wealth, and everything, and make love, no war. And that, mental health, physical health, all leading to human development. If you had human development, you'd have sexual health, and that these were really interrelated. And so as governments are really struggling to meet those MDG guidelines, sexual health is an essential component of really enhancing the well-being and health of citizenry. It's also become, as John said, a very unifying concept that you hear in HIV and STI prevention. And also in reproductive health promotion. So it's very timely to be talking about this. And now I'm going to go into this whole lifespan and in another 10 minutes cover the whole kind of thing. Much of this is from an article that was published by John DeLamator and Bill Friedrich in 2001. John just published a book in 2011. You can look John DeLamator. It's an updated thing. But what is very striking from 2001 is we haven't made a lot of advances in terms of our understanding of normal sexual development. And mainly the problem is we can't study kids. We can't ask them the questions. We can't look at what's going on with them sexually. We know a lot about adults, and we're learning a little bit more about older adults, and I hope they find out fast because I'm getting there. We need to understand, we need a lot more research to understand these kind of developmental milestones, but I think that we do have an understanding of some of the basic things, and I'm going to go through the milestones and what are the needs. And again, I'm going to go through this very fast. You'll have the presentation, you can go back to the article, but we'll get a flavor of all of this. Obviously, in pregnancy, the physical and emotional health of the mother and child is very important, that the child is loved, and you'll hear this over and over again. Stable, nurturing environment is essential. There are needs for family planning, nutrition, prenatal care, HIV, STD testing, violence prevention, oftentimes forgotten. Pregnancy is a very, very high-risk time for violence for women, as you know. Infancy, birth to 2 years, the children explore their body, they experience start to experience pleasure. But the most important thing is this bonding, this attachment that occurs between the child and the parents, and the unbelievable importance of touch. And we know that kids that are not touched really fail to thrive and will actually die. And we can see deficits in a capacity to intimacy, relationships later on when kids have not had that basic kind of attachment. And all of you are familiar with Bowlby's work on attachment, this basic important kind of thing. So again, stable nurturing environment, good physical emotional connection. Parents need education at this time, and we need to do a really good job in well child visits to address developmental problems. And childhood 3 to 7 years of age, there's a whole bunch that goes on now, is that by the age of 3 or 4, gender identity gets established. There's socialization of gender roles. There's lots of sexual rehearsal. Kids, again, despite Freud, this is not an asexual period. Kids are very curious. They're learning a lot. They're watching, and they're engaging in sexual rehearsal play. And this is a very important thing. And in fact, John Money, looking at sexual, if there are interruptions in this period of time, this is what causes a lot of later pathologies of love and intimacy. So there's lots of curiosity about genitals, lots of questions about sex, and so much, again, is really very normative. And not allowing kids to explore, not go through this, is very, very problematic. So what do they need at this time? They need that stable, nurturing environment. They need that connection. Parents need education. They need education. Sexual education has to become very, very early. Preschool physicals, again, addressing developmental problems. And now we really, again, it's very important that these kids are protected from abuse, from bullying, from discrimination and violence, which we know have very poor outcomes. Pre-adolescence, 8 to 12 years old, what's going on there? There's all this same gender socialization during this period of time. Kids explore masturbation. There's the emergence of sexual attraction. John Money believes that by age 8, a person's erotic template or map of eroticism is fairly well established. It's not really discovered totally until puberty. But this is when it really develops. And there's group dating and heterosexual parties, and there's a beginning the process of developing relationships. Same theme, stable, nurturing environments, physical and emotional connection, education. Guidance. These kids really need guidance during this period of time as they are exploring and experimenting. They need boundary setting. They need encouragement. They need to have their questions answered, need to deal with developmental problems, and again, protection from abuse, bullying, discrimination, and violence. Adolescence, 13 to 19. So I break it down to this is a period of biological development. You know, the puberty develops earlier and earlier. Development of sex characteristics and reproductive capacity is reached. And one of the things that we keep on forgetting is that we've kind of created this time that people are completely have their capability of reproductive capacity, and they are surging in hormones, and we have this long period of time that they need to manage their sexuality, explore relationships, and that period of adolescence, we kind of delay it more and more. 25, wait till you finish college, wait till you finish graduate school, wait till you whatever, and so we extend this period of time. There's sexual behavior. Males begin masturbating with ejaculation orgasm, 13 to 15. Females less often than males, and that's a consistent finding. Dating and development of meaningful relationships occurs during this period of time. Initiating of sexual activity with others. Initiating of sexual intercourse, and that's mediated by a number of factors. And again, this, what I talked about, this gap in peak of sexual development and the time that people develop committed relationships. And so these kids need a lot of help during this period of time. They have developmental tasks of developing their individual identity. They develop their abstract reasoning, moral development, decision making, and further their whole psychosexual development, not only their identity, but how they feel about themselves, their sexual self-esteem, and they really start to develop their capacity for physical and emotional intimacy. Lots of needs at this time. They need a lot of guidance. They need a lot of role modeling. They need avenues for socialization. They obviously need pregnancy prevention, STI prevention, and again, protection from violence. And they need access to sexual health services in that broad, integrated kind of way. In adulthood, there's further development of intimacy and relationship skills. We learn to manage relationships, usually by trial and error, making informed decisions about sex and reproduction, childbearing and rearing. And some of us have to sort of recover from the problems that went on and kind of make up for some of the things that we missed in our growing up. We have choices. We have to choose lifestyles. And again, traditional monogamy is no longer sort of what happens for everyone, but people are choosing to be in many different kinds of relationships. And sexual satisfaction is very important. Developing satisfactory and pleasurable sexual relationships is really important. And adapting to all of the changes that go on, birth, aging, illness, injury, and the, you know, having children, losses, divorce, life changes, and having to adapt to all of those kinds of things. So there's just a lot of needs during this period of time. Just want to say a few words about the sexual development of GLBT persons. The milestones are the same, and yet because society still has difficulty with people who are gender nonconforming, who have sexual orientation differences, they don't really allow that development for those unique identities. And so many of these people experience developmental delays. And so people start coming out at 20 or 30 or 40 or 50, and here they're doing adolescent kinds of things. And I was just reminded that my paper on the developmental process of the coming out process was published 30 years ago. And I didn't realize that just this month. And the sad reality is how relevant that article is today, that the struggles of GLBT people, you know, developing a positive sexual identity and relationships is still a challenge. And so there are unique sexual health needs for people. And we know that individuals who are GLBT, as the IOM report on GLBT health pointed out, there are serious health disparities, and we need to pay special attention. Adulthood, education, relationship skills, reproductive health, STI, same kind of thing. Lots of needs during adulthood. The other thing we need to recognize is that people have to face all these, that again, sexual health is facing not just sexual, you know, it's also dealing with poverty, discrimination, stigma, violence, these interactions of epidemics that we have in this culture. And that can be quite challenging for a number of people to deal with all of that. Aging, there's lots of biological changes that occur. And then as we get older, we're taking medications, we're developing in it, that all affect our sexuality, making it challenger. We're living longer, longer relationships, relationships get boring for people. They change them. They do something different. They lose them for separation, divorce, widowhood. People are living alone. People who are divorced at 50, not very likely to really remarry in today's culture, living a whole different lifestyle. They have a lot of needs, and I think we're recognizing this more and more. We need to address the sexual health needs of aging people. The point is that we are sexual from birth till death. We have sexual needs throughout the lifespan. And sexual health improves the sexual well-being and thus reduces illness and disease. If we promote sexual health in that broad kind of sense, we will see, and again, it's just pathetic that as a developing country that we have the worst, you know, statistics in terms of STIs, unwanted pregnancies, a number of unnecessary abortions, etc. And so the sexual health approach is promising. And as a result, we can have a sexually healthier world for everyone. So thank you very much.
Eli, thanks. What a terrific kickoff. So maybe 1 or 2 minutes of any clarifying questions for Dr. Coleman.
I went fast. Yep.
And perhaps go to the mic. I think this is being recorded, if you don't mind. Is that right? Sorry.
I can repeat the question. Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, what is the role of spirituality? And I think that that is really an important role. And actually, we have a sexual health model, and it's one of the important components of that. so I didn't put it in my slides there, and you pointed that out. But I think that, you know, people's values, people's spiritual, religious beliefs, and having them integrated with their sexual behavior is a very important aspect. And when those are disconnected, there are oftentimes problems with sexual health outcomes. Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah.
I'm Savannah from Canada.
Yeah.
Is the definition of sexual health that was done by the expert group
yes.
2006 accepted by WHO?
It's still a working definition, and the definitions have to be approved by the world body. No, the 2006 was simply the publication date, but they are moving to really get that definition approved by the General Assembly, but they're just waiting for the right political moment.
Yeah. Which is going to be when? Dr. Coleman, thank you very much.